Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Rhino in the Element Wealth Studio, guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Morning there, Rhino.
Howdy, howdy.
All right, give us an update on the drone gate, will you? What in the wide world of sports is going on with all that stuff?
Oh, man, you want the short version or the long version? I guess I'll give you the long version. Okay. We got plenty of time, even though it is a shortened show today. We have the 2 hours, and then we've got Super Talk Outdoors with Matthews at noon. So I won't take the entire 2 hours, but I will go a little off into the weeds. If you pay close enough attention and connect enough dots, which I know this seems a little bit like tinfoil hat territory, but all of this is just readily available online, publicly accessible information. I believe it's called open source intelligence, is what the professionals or the former professionals call it.
Yeah.
But essentially, you can tie the drone situation in New Jersey that has everybody's attention to the pullout of Afghanistan.
Okay.
There's a connection between those two things, because if America hadn't had the disastrous pullout of Afghanistan that we had, creating the power vacuum and allowing the Taliban to take back over pretty much immediately, and if we had a competent federal government that would either publicly acknowledge their mistakes or at least recognize when other countries' intelligence agencies are trying to help, then we would recognize that Osama bin Laden's son, Hamza bin Laden, is alive, although the CIA says he's dead.
Okay.
And he's in Afghanistan leading al-Qaeda, who is being protected by the Taliban. Well, we are funneling millions of dollars of humanitarian aid and counterterrorism money into Afghanistan that is being basically embezzled, I think is the correct term, because it's not being used properly. It's being funneled to training camps and terrorist organizations because, well, the various groups of Islamic terrorists, some of the names you know off the top of your head, like al-Qaeda and ISIS, and some are a little bit less well-known, like some of the groups in Syria that have been working in the last few weeks and different stuff like that. They're, for the longest time, we've viewed them as, well, they don't get along because they don't agree with how things should be done. Even though they all believe in the same God, they don't really like each other. But after 20-plus years of America playing whack-a-mole with them, they've started being friendlier to each other, and they've started playing along. And even though they have different goals, they all have the same end goal of killing Americans. All that being said, if you think back in recent history, recent news, Iran has been flying the red flag of doom because they're angry at the world. And they've flown it for various reasons, some of which being Israel, some of which being back when Trump was president the first time around and he killed Soleimani in Iraq, or he gave the go-ahead. He didn't personally do it, but they hold him personally responsible. Well, you remember about the same time the first assassination attempt on Trump came out, there was scuttlebutt about an Iranian-backed assassination attempt?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so following that, Iran is a nuclear power from the standpoint of they have nuclear energy facilities. They do not have nuclear weapons, but they have nuclear materials in country. Going back to the drones, many of these drones have been identified as radiation-seeking drones. Heavy drones, requires a professional drone operator, and many of which are owned by the military. Well, if you start connecting all these dots, it would not really be that big of a stretch to believe that the military is training drone pilots on how to navigate and maneuver over an urban environment looking for radiation. Because it's been shown that Iran wants to kill Trump. They're funneling hundreds of millions of dollars a week into the training and buildup of an attack in response to Trump's go-ahead for Soleimani. And Iran has nuclear materials. So
you're stretching it, man.
I'm getting out in the weeds, but when you start connecting everything, it starts to make sense, especially when you look at stuff like, oh, these drone flights, these supposed alien drones, they all seem to wrap everything up around 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Almost like they're following a schedule, like a training schedule.
It is weird. I totally agree.
It's the only thing that makes sense when all the different questions are asked. Because why would an alien drone, why would an intergalactic alien species use the same color navigation lights we use on planes? I mean, a lot of these drones are having to use the green and red and white navigation lights because they're right next to Newark. But you got a whole bunch of people that want to believe, that are convinced these are coming from the ocean. Yeah, probably off a Navy vessel off the shore.
Yeah. I mean, all plausible. So I feel like something's going on where at the end of the day, the government is looking to rally us for some purpose, some cause.
I mean, that's one of the theories on the internet, is that this is an Ozymandias event, like from Watchmen.
Yeah.
Where they do something, it's a false flag, and it gets everybody riled up or gets everybody on the same page. But it feels more like training than it does something like that, because, well, look at Ukraine.
Yeah.
Look at the innovations in warfare that we've seen with drone technology in Ukraine theater. And look at how the war itself over there is changing the way we look at war in general around the world just because of the use of drones.
Yeah.
So if we don't have enough drone pilots trained to use the radiation-detecting drones or whatever else,
yeah,
it would only make sense that you want to train as many as you can as fast as you can. And it would also make sense, that's why we're not getting any information on these drones, because it's the military training in response to a credible threat.
All plausible, no doubt about it. But I think people are frustrated because we're not getting any information. And it's just crazy that these...
It doesn't help, too, that you have a lot of people on social media that are just itching for those sweet, sweet invisible internet cool points. They're snapping pictures with their smartphone of obviously jet planes.
Right.
Obviously helicopters. But because it's blurry, because you're using a smartphone's lens at night without any of the proper settings or any lensing, it just looks like a blur. But you attribute whatever you want to believe onto it, even though it's obviously a plane. It's got two wings. I can see a tail fin. It's got green and red. It's not an alien.
And that's what makes this kind of difficult, is that everybody runs around with a camera in their hand, and they're just snapping anything that even remotely looks like it could be a craft flying
in
the sky.
It's what's basically sunk the Bigfoot people.
Yeah, that's true.
It's hard to buy into a 8-foot-tall, hairy ape man wandering the wilderness, not being captured in high def at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, the whole thing's crazy.
It is.
No doubt about it. And people are trying to figure it out.
I mean, I went through a tangle of all kind of nonsense to get to probably the most boring explanation of its training flights, and they don't want to talk about training.
Yep.
But you start connecting all the dots and putting together the pieces with what's available, that's what makes the most sense to me.
Yeah. Well, it appears that some sort of drone detection equipment. Have you seen this? State-of-the-art drone detection equipment is being launched. This is what the Secretary of Homeland Security said, who may be the least trustworthy member of the entire Biden cabinet. Alejandro Mayorkas, because he keeps going in front of Congress and saying, the border is secure. I mean, it's the captain of the Titanic. All is well. Calm down. Well, he says that his department is on it with respect to the drones, but he says they don't have any answers. So apparently, like immediately, the federal government is set to deploy a drone detection system. Now, what the heck is that? In New York. And this is just
a way of coming out and saying, look, we're doing something. Don't pay attention to the training flights.
That's right. Even though Chuck Schumer called for federal authorities to do even more, he said officials should allow recently declassified radar technology to be used to help determine whether an object is a drone or a bird, and also to identify its electronic registration. Stepping aside for a break, Jamie Miller, the Gulf Coast Business Council at 11:05.
You.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back. We are in the Element Wealth studio. Are you thinking about or planning for retirement? Do you have a plan? Go to myelementwealth.com or call 601-957-6006 to let Element Wealth help you find your balance between income, growth, and guarantees. The Dow hopping around the old unchanged line, back and forth, presently up 1.11. The NASDAQ also up as well today, though it is pulled back somewhat. Price of oil hovering around. Oh, the NASDAQ's up more than it was a little while ago, and now up 185 points. The price of oil sitting at around 70 bucks, been hovering around there a barrel for a while. The old funny money up good bit today, about 5%, a little under 5% to 106,000.
Yeah, it hit a record high yesterday.
Wow.
At 106.
Yeah, the S&P up as well. So the Russell 2K, I think it's going to be a good 4 weeks for markets. I really do. I'm very optimistic about the trend in the equities markets. And it's typically pretty strong as we head into the end of the year. And I think that's what we're going to see. So that's welcome news. You saw that President Biden has been pretty busy granting clemency to 1,500 people, it turns out. One of those that caught my attention is a Mississippian, a Mississippi doctor, Mira Sachdeva. I'm not sure if I pronounced the last name correctly or right, Sachdeva, sentenced to 20 years. I'll have to admit, I don't remember this case. 20 years in prison back in 2012 for defrauding Medicare, was required to reimburse as part of the sentencing, $8.2 million to her cancer, her former cancer facility. And what she did was provided cancer patients with diluted chemotherapy drugs. Also provided them with old needles. At least one patient claimed to have contracted HIV from a needle used by her clinic. This is something I wasn't aware of. Now, I don't know how they go about finding the 1,500 people to grant clemency to. 1,500, that's like a record, I think, is it not?
Well, I don't think they're actually seeking them out. I believe the people are trying their best through any connection they have to get their name in front of him.
Okay. So they got a list of names and they just pick through those, you think?
Possibly. I don't think Biden is actually going through a list.
No,
team would
no
be.
No chance, yeah. 1,500.
But his team wouldn't even be the ones going out and going, all right, who out of 350 million people can we pardon?
Yeah.
It's more like, dear Mr. Biden, I'm writing to the White House, so-and-so in my family has, and you just, you're shooting in the dark with that one, or, hey, my cousin's uncle's brother's dad's sister's son-in-law knows the dog walker for the senator from, and you just go from there, and it's like, hey, this is my Hail Mary. Can you put this in front of the president?
Yeah. Well, it turns out that the news organizations have obtained a to-do list from the White House. This was a memo issued just yesterday. And this memo outlines the current president's key priorities to accomplish before leaving office next month. And that includes expanding clemency and pardons. They want to do more. Advancing climate-related initiatives, of course. More student debt forgiveness, and addressing concerns about artificial intelligence. That is in accordance with a memo by Ben LeBolt, senior advisor to the president and also a communications director. He will prioritize allocating additional funds from his signature laws, including the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS Act. Of course, just doubling down on this garbage. Now, please also know that the government's running out of money again. Come December the 20th. So they're all huddled up there in Washington to try to kick the old can down the road again with a continuing resolution that would extend funding for the government for another 3 months or so. But they did just pass a defense bill. The bill, commonly known as the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, that's essentially a legislative package that provides funding for the United States military, the Department of Defense. Now, if you thought that we were headed towards a bit of fiscal austerity, think again. This bill, just so you'll know, which would fund defense for the entire 2025, remaining in the 2025 fiscal year, it is an increase, $895 billion total. That is an increase of $26 billion over last year's Defense Authorization Act. So we're going up. We're going to give them another $26 billion. I'm kind of upset by this, to let you know. I thought the idea was, wait a second, new sheriff's in town. We got this Department of Government Efficiency. We're going to root out all this waste, and we're going to reduce spending, and we're going to get our fiscal house in order. What happened? I was blown away by this, honestly. This just passed.
Those people aren't in charge yet.
Okay.
That doesn't happen until the calendar turns over.
Okay, I get that.
These are all the old regime burning down the house on their way out the door.
But the Republicans are in charge of the house. They do have the house, and they went along with this. I guess what I'm saying is I'm not optimistic seeing this action that we're going to see. Sweeping spending change. So does that mean that since we're on this effort of reducing spending, are we going to cut defense spending next year when they do this again? And is it going to cut the amount we just increased it by and then some? I thought that was a kind of a move that it shocked me a little bit. It doesn't seem like we're going in the right direction. Now, it did have some stuff in it that I thought was good, such as banning gender surgery and other gender treatments. This is insane that taxpayers are paying for this for members of the military. I just don't think that's something that the taxpayers ought to be on the hook for. You want to go change your gender? These are all adults, obviously. You want to go chop off your genitals and ingest a bunch of drugs and stuff because you think that you need to go change your gender? Have at it. I don't want to pay for it, though. I don't think taxpayers should be required to pay for that. So I saw that as a positive. At least they stripped that out. But, gosh, they added $26 billion to the total. We're headed, obviously, at $895 billion. We're headed towards a trillion-dollar annual defense budget. Now, this, of course, is placed in the hands of people who can't find a bunch of what we already gave them. They've failed their, seventh audit, consecutive audit. It just makes no sense to me that we're sending them more money. Now, most of Congress, according to reports, remain in support of increasing the defense budget. Now, that includes the incoming chair of the Armed Services Committee, none other than Mississippi's own Senator Roger Wicker, who has called for a, quote, generational investment in defense to meet a challenging geopolitical security environment. Where's the cutting? Where's that? What happened to that? I thought this was all about this $500 million here and a billion there, and I know that's real money, but you just increased the defense budget by $26 billion just with a swipe of a pen through the houses. I don't get it. We're stepping aside for a break, coming right back in the Element Well studio.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Trump is currently speaking at Palm Beach, Florida. I think he's at Mar-a-Lago. He says the golden age of America has begun. Says we're going to reduce taxes and pay off debt. Man, I hope that's the case. Right now, I don't see a path to paying off any debt. I really don't. You're not going to pay off debt when you're increasing the defense budget by $26 billion. You're going in the other direction. And today, by the way, the Senate is going to take up a bill that will reverse a Social Security benefits policy that's been in place for quite some time. And it has to do with Social Security benefit calculations for those who work for employers where they have pensions, mainly public sector employers, railroad workers, et cetera, where they do not pay into Social Security. They've got a waiver, essentially, from Social Security Administration that goes back decades. and they simply contribute to their pensions. Well, when they apply for Social Security benefits, if they qualify, because many of them also work jobs at some point in their career where they do pay into Social Security, just a normal, typical job like most of us have, where we don't have these employer-provided special pensions, like PERS in the state of Mississippi, for example. And so they qualify if they pay in, I believe, 10 years into Social Security. You qualify for retirement benefits. And there's law in place right now that calculates the benefits in a way that considers the fact that you also had a private pension. So it reduces your benefit somewhat. Well, the House just passed legislation, and now the Senate will take it up. It's scheduled to be voted on today. And what this would do is reverse that law. So state and local government employees, those are the primary individuals who have this waiver, if you will, where they only contribute to their respective pension plans associated with their employment, but don't contribute to Social Security. So the Senate's going to vote on this bill that would essentially give them a Social Security bonus. Now, keep in mind, Social Security runs out of money in 10 years. It's on a course to insolvency. But instead of fixing these finances, and I just saw on the screen here, Mr. Trump just said, we are not going to cut Social Security and Medicare. I'm for that, but that just means it's going to run out of money and won't be able to cover full benefits in 10 years. Right now, Social Security has a $22.4 trillion unfunded obligation, and Medicare has a $52.9 trillion obligation. So by passing this law, this bill into law, this is $200 billion of additional pressure put on the Social Security Trust Fund. I don't get it. I thought we were, again, that we were entering an era of fiscal responsibility and common sense in addressing this $36 trillion of debt we have and these annual $2 trillion deficits, and yet we got both parties that are digging us into a deeper hole. This just really means that the program runs out of money quicker than it's currently scheduled to do. So that just was an interesting turn of events in my view. And I know a lot of folks that have lobbyists that represent these groups have been pushing for this for quite some time. The president-elect also is eyeing privatizing the United States Postal Service. Now, Rhino, you know, we have a few people that we know listen, tune into our show, that text us, that are postal workers, mail carriers, et cetera. And they're just doing their job. These are good folks that get up every day and make their appointed rounds, deliver the mail, work for the United States Postal Service. And we appreciate them. But we got people that have been running the place that aren't very good. And you saw the postmaster last week on the Hill when he got sideways with a member of Congress questioning him about the program's financial challenges. And he got a bit sharp with him. That's putting it nicely.
And then he started acting like a toddler.
Put his hands over his ears. I'm not hearing you. Remember that? And it was because he gave the organization, from a financial perspective, an A rating. Dude, you lost $10 billion last year, and you gave your organization an A rating. And the congressman took exception to that and said, you think it's an A? He put his hands over his ears. I can't hear you. I'm not listening. Now, I'm all for privatizing the USPS, But unless there's some significant restructuring to the organization's cost model, and again, it's pensions that are a big reason why the organization loses money. You got that. Plus, you got the parcel business for the USPS is down. Just the volume of mail in general is down. I don't really think, and this is what Trump said, that the government should not be subsidizing this organization. Interesting. But that's something else that he has proposed. Last week we reported to you that he's also looking at increasing the federal minimum wage. I disagree with that plan. I do not think the federal government should mandate the minimum wage at all, honestly. I think that should be handled at the state level, consistent with some of the other things we've seen that have been sent to the states, such as the issue of abortion, which is essentially what the Dobbs case did in its ruling, which is repealed Roe v. Wade several decades ago. So he's indicated that. Now, there are a lot of changes coming about with respect to the minimum wage. On January 1, 23 states are increasing the minimum wage in 65 localities. But, Rhino, perhaps the craziest one of all, I'm not sure if you guys saw this. This just happened late last week, Los Angeles. Its city council just voted to raise the minimum wage for hotel and airport workers to $30 an hour. $30 an hour. Now, a lot of people in L.A. fear that this is going to mean lost jobs, business closures, housing conversions. Goes to $25 an hour next year, and then $30 by 2028. And by the way, if you're a business and you don't provide health insurance, no matter your size, federal law requires any employer with 50 or more employees must provide affordable coverage. If you don't do that, you got to pay fines to the federal government. I don't know of any company, honestly, with 50 or more employees that doesn't offer some sort of group coverage. Well, if you don't do that in L.A., you got to pay, get this, $8.35 per hour to cover health benefits. So L.A. is basically saying, okay, employer, either you provide affordable coverage to your employees or you're going to have to pay them $8.35 an hour to cover their health care. Oh, that won't have any impact on inflation or anything. Nothing like that. So I keep wondering, how are we going to get this inflation monster under control? Because, let's be honest, that's the primary reason Republicans swept the House, the Senate, and the White House on November 5th. Right now, Mr. Trump says, we'll knock down drug costs. So is this more government insertion in the cost of drugs? That didn't work out very well for the Biden administration. So I'm worried about this. I think people are expecting, man, after Mr. Trump takes office, I'm going to go to the grocery store and see the price of stuff has come down. I don't see what's going to cause that at this point. How will that be driven? We're coming right back in the Element Well studio.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Waweza kuwa na hakika kupitia wimbo njia yako ya kupitia.
You just wonder if Joe Biden's behind the drones. Is he trying to create a little chaos and leave a mess? He certainly seems like it for the incoming president. Certainly seems like it with respect to what's he doing, selling off wall assets. You've seen that, some of the materials and other assets involved to construct the wall at the southern border. They're liquidating those, right? So you got that going on, and this trying to push for more student debt forgiveness. He's got that. The clemency. Seems like it's just mass clemency. Just trying to create problems. I do think there is a little bit of that going on. I really do. It's kind of sickening, honestly.
You didn't catch that that song was in a completely different language.
I did not. Did not. What about
it? The tune might have sounded familiar because the tune is one many listeners probably know, but that language was actually Swahili.
Oh, okay.
It was a video that went viral over the weekend where it's a guy from East Africa wearing a cowboy hat singing a country gospel song in Swahili.
Yeah.
Come to find out, that's a Gaither vocal band hit titled in English, I'm Gonna Sing.
I'll be darned. On the C Spire text line, never in my 44 years delivering mail, says Mailman Clayton, have I worked harder or longer days keeping up with the demands on me to deliver packages. We often work 10 to 12 hours a day. With darkness coming around 5:30, the stress levels rise considerably to stay safe. Mailman Clayton, again, we appreciate your service, and I hope you certainly understand that any criticism certainly coming from me concerning the United States Postal Service is, again, directed at the people that are in charge of the organization's finances because they haven't done very well on it. So it really kind of makes you think, Rhino, when you got a worker out in the field that's working their rear off, you would think that would translate to, I don't know, at least breaking even. Because I know that our friend Mailman Clayton's not the only one. So something else is going on. And maybe it does make sense to privatize the organization. I'm just not sure who would be willing to take it on. I mean, you'd have to come up with something, perhaps, that would address the outstanding pension liability, I would think, is part of that.
Neil from McGee also sent in a picture of a full load of mail there.
Yeah, wow. Thank you, Neil. Looking at that. Unbelievable. No, and I'll admit, I see them in my neighborhood. I mean, bustling around, running around, man. No doubt about it.
Especially this time of year.
Especially this time of year, because they know. They get how important it is that stuff gets delivered on time, especially with Christmas around the corner. I totally get it.
Speaking of that, it would be good to give a little PSA out. If you are doing some last-minute Christmas shopping, you basically have until Wednesday before the price to play poker goes up.
Yeah, you're right about that.
If you get everything ordered by Wednesday, you should still be able to get it at the normal shipping rate before Christmas. But anything after Wednesday, you're going to run into expedited shipping, which is going to...
Yeah.
You're going to be paying through the nose for that.
May cost more than whatever it is you're shipping in some cases. On the C Spire text line, the $26 billion is about a 3% cost of living adjustment, and Trump ran on increasing the defense budget. Well, we're talking about the $26 billion increase in defense. I hear you. So I just make the point again. He says we're not touching Social Security. He says we're not touching Medicare. We can't touch debt interest. We have that obligation. We're not going to touch defense. Well, you add all that up, that's about 75% of spending. You don't have much left. In fact, what you got left is Medicaid and all the other rest of government, which comprises about 15% of total spending. Medicaid's about 10, a little over 10%. That's it. So we're going to cut Medicaid? We're going to cut all the rest of it? You can do that. You still are going to produce a significant deficit. That's not enough. Get rid of the Medicaid program. Get rid of all the rest of government. You still got a $1 trillion deficit. That's how the math works.
Playing a bit of devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
Is it more digestible to take big chunks out of the ones you just mentioned if you've already gone through every little nickel and dime with a fine-tooth comb and trimmed as much of that as you possibly could?
Yeah, you've got to do that first. I totally agree. And that's not to say there's not significant waste, fraud, and abuse in Social Security, in Medicare. Heck, you know that. We've talked about it many times. But is it that true in defense as well? Should we be doing it there before we say, here, have some more money, even though you can't tell me what happened to $800 billion or something insane like that? I don't get that logic. We're stepping aside for a break. It's Fox News, Super Talk News coming up next. And then Jamie Miller, the CEO of the Gulf Coast Business Council. Stay with us.
Of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher. And now, the talk that keeps Mississippi talking.
That's what I like to listen to.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert. Here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It is Middays. We're live in the Element Well studio. It's Monday. That means it's a two-hour show, and then it's Ricky Matthews with Super Talk Outdoors. Right now, it's Jamie Miller, CEO of the Gulf Coast Business Council. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, good afternoon, or good morning, Gerard. Good to be with you.
Yes, sir. Thanks for coming on. So give us an update from the Mississippi Gulf Coast. What's going on from a business perspective down there?
Well, I'm glad to report our economy is still strong. Our local communities have done well coming out of the pandemic. Our industries have made some big announcements lately, starting with Ingalls Shipbuilding, who announced a multi-bundle contract for Navy ships over the next decade. And just recently, our Harrison County Development Commission announced a $540 million capital investment from PCC. Gulf Chem, that'll be located here in Pass Christian. So it's been a lot of positive news wrapping up 2024.
Yeah, well, that's good news. Good news. And the state overall is doing well. We've witnessed a number of economic development announcements the last couple of years, in particular, a flurry in them, multiple billions of dollars being poured into our state. We must be doing something right. We're getting the attention of, global companies that are saying that Mississippi is a good place to do business.
Yeah, Gerard, I had the opportunity to work at Mississippi Development Authority for about 5 years. I know you've been close to it with some of your board memberships in Madison County. It seems like a switch was flipped after the pandemic. I think business and industry was ready to come forward and start making some investments in Mississippi. Thankfully, given our leadership in the state, was positioned to take advantage of those things. So Mississippi's been a winner in this new economy or this current economy, and I look forward to continued success.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we're seeing as much a cooperation among the various economic development outlets across our state, working with Mississippi Development Authority, the governor's office, et cetera. It seems like that's paying dividends, Jamie.
It certainly is. Of course, I'm worried about our region here on the Gulf Coast,
sure.
Which is a mix of tourism and industry and all sorts of things. But it's certainly positive when we can see these other announcements happening in Madison County, in Lauderdale County, Columbus Lounge,
yeah.
North Mississippi. It really just brings and elevates full of confidence that I think our leaders have in the direction we're headed. And we've seen it, you can talk about education, you can talk about taxes, you can talk about workforce. Mississippi clearly seems to be on a good track, and we're starting to see that return on investment.
Yeah, absolutely. Jamie, what do you have to say, if anything, and if you don't want to talk about it, I certainly understand about this seafood situation that's going on with the restaurant community on the Gulf Coast.
Well, I would say that, you know, visitors should expect, and we expect, transparency when we go to a restaurant or when we buy seafood at a deli about what we're buying.
Yeah.
And I think a large majority of the restaurants and seafood places on the coast are doing it right. But anytime you have a question mark around that, I think regardless, you have to do something about it. So I've spoken with several of our industry leaders, others, and legislators. We're going to do something this year. I hope we finish with a labeling law or something that's going to put this question to bed about what you can expect to eat when you come to the Gulf Coast. And look, certainly imports are a big part of that. There's no way to feed the USA purely on American or Gulf food. We have to rely on imports, and there's good seafood in other places. You certainly ought to know what you're eating when you order something at a restaurant.
Okay. Well, that's something that's got obviously a lot of attention across the state, and I know in particular across the Gulf Coast. And I believe you're right that the vast majority of the restaurants are transparent, do it right. Honorable people, you got maybe a few that need to step their game up a little bit, and I agree with you that their patrons deserve to know and just need the truth. I think it's pretty simple. The world changed on November 5th, certainly in the state, in the country, with the elections. How are you and your business members, the business community, how are they thinking about the incoming administration? Are they optimistic about this?
Yeah, we recently had our executive committee retreat, and we talked a lot about preparing ourselves, preparing the region for this change in this new federal administration. I think it's going to be positive. I think it's attention to the environment, the tax environment. Those are all things that seem to point us in a good direction, and we want to be positioned as a region to take advantage of that. I think you can, you know, energy is another issue that's going to play a big role in our economy.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of positive things to look toward. But if we're not positioned, if our region, our state's not positioned to take advantage of it, then we'll miss something.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things I've certainly talked a lot about the show is the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which is set to expire, the individual provisions, and that also would affect most small and mid-sized business operators who operate as pass-through entities. That's all set to expire at the end of next year. Are they voicing that as a priority to make sure those get extended or made permanent?
Yeah, they are. So we do a CEO business survey of our CEOs and our businesses. We're just gathering that final information. And, of course, we try to keep a close relationship with our congressional delegation and the folks at the state. But there's no question people were preparing for a different outcome given this election. And now that the results are in and we're going to have a Trump administration and hopefully – I think by all accounts, there's going to be a priority put on extending those tax cuts and making sure that we don't unnecessarily create barriers to those small businesses and businesses that should be thriving in this economy, not being held back.
Yeah, absolutely. So we got, as you know, hard to believe the legislature will be gaveling in here pretty soon, less than a month. Anything that you and your organization is working on that you're expressing to your delegation on the coast that you'd like to see get done?
Well, I think we're always paying attention to the regulatory environment in Mississippi in particular and the tax structure. And, of course, there's been a lot of talk about fully eliminating income tax. There was a pretty robust discussion last year about Medicaid expansion. PERS, which impacts, you know, our municipal and county government down here. So we're certainly keeping those conversations in mind. I think the Gulf Coast Restoration Fund is somewhat unique to the lower six counties in Mississippi. That's a settlement fund that gets spent each year in the lower part of the state. We continue to want to advocate for transformative economic development projects on the Gulf Coast, and And that is one fund that the legislature determines each year in their appropriation. So we'll watch that closely, and then we'll also keep defense on a handful of things that may pop up during the session. So we will have a presence in the Capitol. We'll stay connected to the leadership in the Capitol. And then, you know, as the session goes on, we hope to make sure that no harm is done first, and then also to promote those things that would advance Mississippians' quality of life and our economy.
Yeah, that's a good point. Do no harm first. That's the main thing. You always get a little nervous when they gather up because they get busy, and the next thing you know, you got 3,000, 3,500 bills that they get at least drafted and introduced. Now, the vast majority of those don't even make it out of committee, but it's a lot to keep up with, and especially business people that may be concerned about something that would affect them.
Yeah, and that's what our organization likes to pride itself in, is we do weekly legislative updates to our members. It's not possible for an individual business. I mean, certainly other large businesses will have their own team and maybe even focus attention to it. But a large number of our businesses don't have somebody in the Capitol. I mean, they read what they can see in the newspaper. And so we do a deeper dive and try to make sure that we're paying attention to committee meetings and how those bills are drafted. And you're right. Thank goodness it's difficult to get a law passed because there's 3,000-plus bills to get introduced. Everybody's got a good idea. Even the good ideas sometimes have bad consequences,
right.
Unintended consequences. And so, we play a direct role in trying to referee some of those things and make sure that our membership is aware so that when necessary we can apply some pressure to maybe defeat a bill or maybe get it back to the finish line.
Yeah, gotcha. Jamie, thanks for calling in. Really enjoyed the discussion. You have a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year. I'm sure we'll be talking to you again soon. Thanks a lot.
You do the same. Take care.
We're coming right back, folks, in the Element Well studio.
All and to all, good night. Just a break. We all need a break.
Hi, I'm Jay 3.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
Down at Marge's bar, telling stories if we had one. Someone fired the old jukebox up. The song it sure was a sad one. Teardrop rolled down Bubba's nose from the pain the song was inflicting. And all at once he jumped to his feet, just like somebody kicked him. Bubba shot the jukebox last night. Said it played a sad song.
Welcome back, everyone. It is Middays live in the Element Well studio. Appreciate Jamie Miller, the CEO of the Gulf Coast Business Council, for calling in. The governor, of course, teased a announcement. Have we seen anything on that yet, Rhino? It is supposed to occur today. I believe this concerns an economic development project, a new investment coming to the state of Mississippi.
But nothing as of yet.
Okay. But we haven't seen anything official at this point. But we're going to keep open up for that. Let's see. Thomas in Greenwood says we could deport $30 million and save a lot. That's actually a little bit more nuanced than I think people understand. I don't know how many people have crossed over in the border and are in this country illegally. You see estimates anywhere from, what, Rhino, 10 million to 30 million. I'm not sure what the figure is. I don't know that we have an exact count. I don't know that we have a system that could provide us an exact count. But it's...
Yeah, the best we have is estimates.
Yeah, it's estimates. But I think the 10 to 30 normally is what is widely believed. Well, that's been going on for a long time. And part of the problem is many of those people are working. And they're baked into our economy. Because it's been going on for decades. And there's no doubt that there are people right here in the state of Mississippi who are working, who are illegal in this country illegally. And they're, I've seen estimates as high as 25 to 30% of construction workers are illegal. They work lots of different jobs across a spectrum of industries. And where I'm going with this is they're actually contributing to society. The cost to the federal government is estimated up to be about $150 billion a year in dealing with the illegals. The higher cost actually falls on cities, municipalities, and states. It's breaking Chicago. You've seen incoming border czar Tom Homan. He said kind of a public rift, if you will, with the mayor of Chicago. In fact, the mayor of Chicago has been getting an earful from Chicagoans who have shown up at city council meetings where they're blasting him and the city council because they seem to be providing more deference to the illegals than the people who are American citizens who inhabit the city of Chicago. And Tom Homan says, you're the first place we're going. Don't try to get in the way. This is going to really be something as this plays out. Now, there ain't no doubt. There are a bunch of ne'er-do-well illegals in this country that are sucking resources and not providing anything. There ain't no doubt about that, and that's expensive. And those need to be deported, as far as I'm concerned. The worst element are those who are committing crime. And unfortunately, there's a large number of those. That would be the first target. And I've heard Tom Homan say, that's the first people we're going after. And unfortunately, many of them inhabit or living in these so-called sanctuary cities because they're friendly to them. Come on in. Commit crime. Steal from the citizens who pay taxes here. It's insanity. I'm all for that. But there's another element to this that's been going on for a long time, which is many of these people do work. They do contribute. They buy stuff. And when they buy stuff, they pay sales taxes. Many of them have what are called ITINs, income tax identification numbers. They don't have Social Security numbers because they're not citizens. But they have ITINs, which is a number that can be obtained by someone here that's working, even illegally, and they pay income taxes on that. They also pay in a Social Security and Medicare, though they're not qualified, not eligible for benefits coming out. So when you hear about the free health care going to the illegals, it's not from that. It's because they show up in the ERs. Or in some states, they allow them to enroll, I think, California in Medicaid. It's breaking them as a result. And then you got FEMA. That was all brought to a head with the Helene disasters in the Carolinas because we learned that there's a program that FEMA has that's funded by our Congress, the federal government, that allows grants for housing and food to cities and states. And it doesn't matter if the people are citizens or not. It clearly says, doesn't matter. If they're in the country, they need a place to live, they need food. Okay, you can pull this grant down from FEMA, and you can fund that. You can cover the cost of that. And that aggravated people. Me too. That's wrong. Especially when you see so many Americans who are suffering the consequences that aren't getting the help of these storms and aren't getting the help they deserve. From FEMA, from our own Federal Emergency Management Association that's funded by American tax dollars. That's not right. No doubt about it. But we have a bigger problem in that if, as Thomas says, we just deport all 30 million, you start pulling them off job sites. And I get it. They're here illegally. And our federal law says you ain't supposed to be here. it is going to cause a problem. And there are employers across the country already speaking up saying, man, I'm worried about losing a lot of employees if the government comes and pulls them out of work and sends them back to their country. We already have a problem with, I mean, the labor market's cooled somewhat. It's not as tight as it was a short 2 years ago. But, gosh, when you think about almost a third of folks working in the construction industry being in this country illegally, we already have a problem with the inflation of housing. That would just exacerbate that problem. So, and I'm not saying, I'm not advocating for allowing them to stay here. I'm just simply sharing with you the economic realities. You want inflation to go down? Okay. You start reducing labor to the point where we can't increase supply, which is the main way you get inflation down. That causes a problem. They pay in about $15 billion a year into Social Security, even though they're not eligible for benefits coming out. You take that out. That puts further financial pressure on the Social Security Trust Fund. It's because it's been going on for so dang long. We've become accustomed to it. We've normalized it into our economy. And now doing the right thing would be disruptive. That's terrible that we got to this point. And you can blame it on the fact that for a long time we haven't been, especially the last 4 years, haven't been serious about securing the border. I don't know how many have crossed over since Biden's been in office. I've seen estimates as high as 20 million, and is right, and around 10 million, I think, is kind of the average most people go with. Well, that's ridiculous, especially if most of those people aren't contributing. Now, the president-elect has said that he's willing to work with Democrats on providing a path to citizenship for the so-called Dreamers. We talked about that last week. I think now there's just under 600,000. I mean, that's not a big chunk of people. Relative to the total, that is. But I'm curious to see what kind of deal. Now, he did offer a deal in his first term. You give me money to build a wall, and we'll work with you on something you Democrats want to do, which is giving these DACA recipients, these Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals recipients, that was policy enacted under Barack Obama, we'll figure out a way to make them citizens. But you got to give me money to build a wall, so we can shut the dang border down. I actually thought that was pretty reasonable. And the Democrats rejected it, by the way. So he's come out again and said, okay, I'm interested in working. He just said, by the way, we're going to knock out the middlemen who are keeping drug prices high. So that wouldn't sound like a very good deal for the pharmacy benefit managers, I think is who he's targeting there. And no doubt there's been lots exposed there that is causing the price of prescription drugs to be elevated, I think unnecessarily. We're stepping aside for a break. Half an hour left on Midday. Stay with us.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It is Middays. That would be Styx. Blue Collar Man. On the C Spire text line, 342 RC Speedway says, it's Jonathan, actually. Isn't it illegal for employers to hire illegal aliens? It is. It's complicated, and we probably need lawyers to sort it out. but they're also referred to as undocumented immigrants. But they can also get some sort of authorization. I don't know exactly what it's called, a work visa or something, that would allow them to work in this country, even though they're undocumented. Then you got a lot of people who have legitimate asylum, have been granted legitimate asylum. They crossed over illegally under the guise of seeking asylum. I question that often. But they're granted that. And of course, nowadays, Rhino, right, they cross over and they say, yeah, okay, you want asylum, we'll see you in 10 years in court. Because the court has to grant it to them, which is insane. Just go ahead about your business in the meantime. That's what's happening.
There's only so many slots on the docket, so only so many days, and you wind up with a backlog of a decade because millions have crossed over.
And that's what we have now. It's exactly what we have. So, again, unfortunately, we've reached a point where so many of these folks, and many of them have what are called temporary work permits. I just want to clarify that. They're just not illegals who've crossed over and 5 minutes later they're out working. They've been granted these temporary work permits. A bunch of them have that. And so there's employers. I read a story about a CEO of an electrical contractor in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He said he'd like to hire as many as 200 workers next year, and even though the labor market's cooled somewhat, he's lucky, he believes, if he can hire 150 of the 200 that he needs. And he said that if the president-elect follows through on his pledge to eliminate these temporary work permits, that he'd lose a bunch of people. And those people would, I guess, be deported. So he's just making a point that I'm already having trouble finding workers, that if I lose workers because they lose these temporary work permits and they're not extended, that would make it an even more difficult challenge. It's estimated that there are about 3.5 million immigrants in the country that are covered by these programs that are working. So you're talking about taking 3.5 million people out of the workforce.
Cool. Let's then go after the, 16.5 left?
And that's all great. I'm just warning, though, the price of stuff's going up if that happens. Price of stuff's going up. And the cost of labor is going to go up because there are going to be fewer people compete for the jobs. The big problem I have is the people on the sidelines that are American citizens that ought to be working these jobs. And that's why they end up, these employers, hiring these people, because the Americans won't get out and work. Because we shower them with all kinds of crazy benefits that they find more than adequate to support the lifestyle they've chosen. That's why I support no minimum wage, honestly. Let the market sort out what the wages ought to be. And that's why a lot of these employers hire these people. You know that, because they pay them less than minimum wage, all cash. I mean, there's millions of them that fit into that circumstance. I suspect there are people that are listening to us that have hired people that have done work for them that will only accept cash, and likely they are illegal doing the work in this country illegally, and they're performing this sort of work. So that is going to be something that's going to get a lot of attention, no doubt about it. I'm for the legal process of obtaining citizenship. I've heard the president-elect say that as well. I've heard those in the Republican Party in particular that, just as I do, want to secure the border, stop the flow. That's the first deadgum thing you got to do. Get that secure. And if people want to come into this country, immigrate into it, and want to contribute and assimilate into society, and they're willing to do it through the legal process that our laws provide, I'm for that. But that's doing it legally. What the Biden administration has done is said, just come on in. Don't worry about the legal process. We got you covered. And that's a problem. Of course, Thomas has to take a shot at Ronald Reagan. He says, we wouldn't have this problem had Reagan not been a cuck and did amnesty instead of deportation. No doubt about it. So excuse criminal behavior because of the economy? Nope, didn't say that. We have to take a stand. I'm just making the point. That's all. I'm just saying that if this happens, expect. The benefit we get is we rid the country of the illegals that are here. And we get back to what we should be, is you don't come into this country and work and enjoy the bounty and the benefits of America unless you're a citizen. That's what we get. Unfortunately, I'm just pointing out the downside is because of years of this going on that many of these people are out in the workforce. And when they're taken out of the workforce, that will have economic consequences. That's the only point I'm making. And so don't get mad if
we're talking about things that could happen.
Yeah.
If China invades Taiwan, the price of everything is going to go up.
No doubt about it.
Out of our control. This would be the price of something possibly going up, and it's within our control.
Yeah.
I'd much rather that than out of my control.
I'm with you. I agree with you. On the ceasefire text line, employers that say they won't be able to find workers means they won't be able to find cheap labor. And that just perfectly illustrates the point I'm making. If the cost of that labor goes up, the cost of everything you buy is going up. Hello, inflation. That's all I'm saying. And look for shortages of things like houses.
We already have a shortage.
Already have a problem. This would exacerbate that problem. So, again, the problem is we've gotten accustomed to this. It's become normalized, especially in the last 3.5 years. And that's causing us problems. And now we may have to take our medicine to fix that problem. Just like when Ronald Reagan was president, he fully realized the inflation that was roiling the country when Jimmy Carter was in office, and he didn't have a clue what to do about it, except shut the gas stations down on Sundays implemented some form of rationing where you could only buy based on, you remember that? You were too young to remember, but I was around. Letter of the alphabet your last name began with. You can buy on this day, and the other half buys on that day for gas and stuff. But nonetheless, Reagan came in and understood, hey, we're going to have to raise the interest rate substantially to get this inflation monster put to bed, and that was painful. But we were better off at the end of it. And that's, I believe, what would happen here. I'm just saying in the short term, it's going to cause pain. That's the price we're going to have to pay. But right now, I really do believe this is a concern I have, that everybody's sitting out there thinking, yeah, as soon as the president-elect takes office, man, I'm going to go to the grocery store and the price is going to be down. I do think there are people out there that erroneously believe that. And that's a concern. They're not going to be happy if in, a short period of time, that's not the case. And you start taking people off the job site, and unfortunately, we just let that go on for too dang long. And it's, honestly, you could place a lot of that blame on Joe Biden, but he'll be gone and nobody will care at that point. They just want stuff working. Let's see here. What else we got? This is Robert from Jackson. Okay, this is going to be about both the budget and the illegals. If we turn the current welfare system into work programs, and I hate to say this, similar to the CCC camps and FDR, the government would actually get something for what they are spending, increased taxes coming in to lower welfare, Medicaid, and take some jobs that illegals are now doing. I mean, many of those programs already have work requirements associated with them. Folks are figuring this out somehow, and I'm still scratching my head about it. I mean, it's rent assistance, which is a couple hundred bucks a month, and TANF benefits, which you have to be essentially working for that, SNAP, food stamps, which I don't see how you could eat off that, honestly, with the price of groceries. Something's going on. There's some scamming going on. There's some doubling up. There's some crazy defrauding going on that's allowing folks that really aren't employed, aren't producing income otherwise. We're coming right back with the final segment.
In Mississippi.
Are we going to do this?
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. 3, 2, 1.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
On the ceasefire text line, national defense military is one of only two federal roles, the primary role. Budget cuts should come elsewhere. This is on the ceasefire text line. Education, retirement, medical are not federal responsibilities. These and other areas are where cuts should come from, says Brian A. So, Brian, are you saying you disagree with the president-elect when he says we're not touching Social Security and Medicare? Just so you'll know, the Social Security last year was $1.45 trillion of the $6.1 trillion budget. Medicare was $870 billion, and defense came in at $850 billion. Interest was $949 billion. And you see where I'm going. Once you add all those up, you don't have a whole lot left. In fact, what you have left is Medicaid, which was $618 billion, and the entire rest of government, which is $850 billion. So between Medicaid and the entire rest of government, and what I mean by that is Department of, help me out here, of Justice, the Department of State, the EPA, the ATF. I mean, the alphabet soup of all those agencies, that's 15% of total spending. I think most people are surprised to learn that all that government complex doesn't really consume but about 15% of the total spending. CMS and HHS, I'm thinking through them, you know, all the transportation and education and all that stuff we all dislike. I agree. It's 15% of spending. Get rid of every bit of that. You still have a $1.2 trillion deficit. So, but again, when you start thinking about eliminating spending to reduce the deficit, and you say, okay, we can't touch interest. We're increasing spending on defense. Can't touch Social Security. Can't touch Medicare. And I've heard some just minor discussions about Medicaid. Okay, well, then this is what you got left. And it's not a lot. Not enough to balance the budget so that you could get to the debt, start paying down debt. I still think that you're going to see a lot of talk about reforming Medicaid, and I totally support that. I think we ought to, at a minimum, transition Medicaid to a block grant program where instead of the states just operating the programs within the parameters of federal law, and they cover a part of it. Of course, the federal government covers the vast majority of it in the matching program. What happens now is the states just send the bill to the government. Okay, in Mississippi, okay, federal government, you are on the hook for 78% of every Medicaid dollar. The state of Mississippi is only on the hook for 22. But there's no limit that the government, the federal government, imposes and says, okay, Mississippi, you can only spend this much. Converting to a block program would, in fact, do that. At the beginning of the year, the federal government would say, okay, Mississippi, we've done the math. Here's how much you get. Anything over that, you're on the hook for. That's the way it would work. That would be step one. Step two, I think, is to return the entire program, just get the government out of the Medicaid business and return the program to the states and let the states fund it. Now, there are a lot of people here in the state of Mississippi would not be too keen on that proposal. Because it means that if we kept the program just like it is today, not expanding, it means the state of Mississippi would have to come up with $6 billion. That's almost as much as our entire general fund budget for this year, which is about $7 billion. That's a $6 billion price tag. But I do think you could phase into that. Again, I'm just looking for a way to cut spending and get this deficit under control and start to attack our debt, pay it down. Let's see here. Kelso in Ocean Springs says, funny, conservatives seem to ignore these obvious facts during the campaign. Not sure exactly what we were talking about then when he sent that, Rhino.
I think that was in reference to the deportation and the economic impact.
Oh, okay. And again, this is not me saying I oppose deporting illegals. They broke the law. And I think we have to enforce the law. I'm simply sharing what the potential economic consequences would be.
You're just doing a more granular approach to what I was talking about. Was it last week where I said you're going to have to harden your heart? You're going to have to get ready for all the waterworks from all the talking heads on all the loser mainstream media?
Yeah.
The second somebody gets deported, it's going to be, oh, the humanity, how could you ever be so mean and evil?
That's more the emotional side of it. I'm simply talking about the economic side of it. And you know that. I'm just simply pointing that out. And again,
but they'll use that for doom and gloom.
Oh, too. There's no doubt. You're going to see fear-mongering off the chart. There ain't no doubt about it. And there are going to be people running around with video cameras. You know that. When they start apprehending illegals, every single one of them is going to have some gigantic sob story behind it. No doubt about it. No doubt. Is it in an attempt to sort of tug at your heartstrings? Oh, no, we can't do this. I'm simply saying is I think we're going to have to swallow some very distasteful medicine in a short-term period to right the ship. And I hope folks are on board with that. We're back with you again tomorrow. Until then, stay safe and God bless.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.